What's up, everybody? This is ClapperCast episode 46. It's April 20th, 2020. My name is Burke.
I'm Sean.
And we are still in quarantine, but keeping it going here, Sean. I think I speak for everybody in the hockey community that we really miss it. All the news about last year's playoffs, the 1 year anniversary of things like the Columbus sweep. Making me sad, so I'm
Yeah,
happy to talk hockey.
spent a lot of time reminiscing over the last week about stuff like that and thinking about how crazy that all was that week when we were watching that series take place. So kind of brought back those memories of hockey and the weird limbo state we're all in right now with it being April when we're expecting playoffs with nothing on.
Yeah, we're kind of being, we got the trail of breadcrumbs of Bettman saying, we'll play through summer. You have players like Max Pacioretty saying, like, I don't care if we have to wait 6 months and play in Antarctica, we'll do it. Things like
I support that. I support you in that.
that, Yeah. So,
I will go to Antarctica to watch you play.
there's still positivity, that there will be something, some sort of finalization of this season, but which is good to see. But yeah, the 1 year mark of last year's first round is definitely, bumming me out a bit. But you had the great idea of maybe going over who we think would be front runners for certain awards this season.
Yeah,
So
so
what
we've
did you
got a
want to...
2019-2020 pre-award show here.
Ooh, I should have worn my tux.
Which one? The normal tux or the Brent Burns style?
Brent Burns, or a t-shirt.
Yes, the t-shirt
T-shirt
one's
tux.
good. The t-shirt one would be me, big time.
So which one did you want to start with? Which award?
Let's go straight into the heart. I mean, that's kind of the main one. The one with
Yeah.
the most discussion to go on, so I feel like breaking straight into with that one.
Who is your front runner for that award?
Front runner for me is going to be Draisaitl.
Ooh, yep.
I think that's kind of the amount of coverage and fanfare he's had around with his name associated with the Hart Trophy this year. I don't think there's any way he doesn't get it at this point. And he does deserve it. I mean, he's got 110 points in 71 games played. 10 of those, 10 of his 45 goals are game-winning goals. He's had the team on his back from day one when he was outplaying Connor McDavid early on this season. And
Yep.
he's been so outstanding to watch on the ice and such a dominant performer that I think he's got it in the bag for himself.
Yeah. Dry was going to be my number one pick too. He's just had a sensational year. He's been dynamite this season, and it's awesome to see. And yeah, like playing with or without Connor McDavid, we've really seen him, carve his place as a great player. There was always that argument that, oh, he's a product of McDavid, and this season you've really seen that. No, he's not.
Oh, and
He's
we
just
even were
that good.
joking earlier on that McDavid is a product of Draisaitl with how the team has
Yeah.
gone this year. And this particular campaign you mentioned, you alluded to it that he had always kind of had, oh, he's only good because of McDavid. This season he spent a lot of his time on his own, centering his own line. And yes, he did struggle big time, and this is the biggest argument against Draisaitl for the Hart, is how poor he was defensively and his negative defensive impact, especially through December. But he's done a lot of the season on his own. He has a lot of power play points playing with McDavid, but even strength, he has still been a solid player. And especially once he found that chemistry with Nugent-Hopkins and Yamamoto come January, they were insane together and they were good all over the place. And this was without McDavid on the line. Draisaitl carried that.
Yeah, he's been just sensational. The only other player that really stands out to me would be Nathan MacKinnon,
Okay.
for
Yeah,
the
I've got
Hart.
McKinnon down here too as well.
Just because, you just watch that guy, he is that team.
That's agreed.
He's just so much better than the rest of the team. It's insane. He's got 93 points. Next closest on the team is Cale Makar. So MacKinnon's got 93 points in 69 games. Makar's got 50 and 57, which is absolutely insane. We'll talk about him in a bit. But you know, he's got a 43-point gap.
Which, that is the largest in the league, by the way, too, between first and second scoring leaders on a team. That 43 that Kanan's got is the biggest in the lead in the league.
Yeah, that is wild to me.
Yeah, so McKinnon, I mean, because like he's basically dragged Colorado into the second spot in the Central Division. They've got like 92 points, and he's basically dragged them there on his own back because the rest of the team has been injured.
Yep.
And yeah. I think, yeah.
His line mates, you know, Landeskog and Rantanen missed lots of time this season. So it's impressive that he's still scored at that rate without, you know, two of his line mates that he played with basically all last season.
Hmm.
But yeah, Colorado as a whole is, you know, a very, I would say they're so much deeper than they were last year. They've had, aside from McKinnon, it's been kind of a score by committee effort. You've had like Jonas Donskoy doing really well, Kadri doing well,
Andrei
Burakovsky, Valery Nichushkin, like all these guys are just kind of, they came to Colorado and they've been playing lights out. And you know, part of that is because they've taken the opportunity of having those big players out of the lineup and, you know, getting more minutes and more power play time and things like that. But you know, I'm just going to come back to that 43 point gap between McKinnon and the next highest player on the team. That to me says he's so important to that team.
Yeah.
I think that might be the only
reason.
He's
doing the Nathan McKinnon level of production with whoever he plays with. This isn't just a case of like the one good line like we were talking about last year. He's doing as good as he is, and he's playing with guys who are second, third liners normally. And he's still, and he's propping them up too. He's helping them produce.
Yeah, and I think I've mentioned this maybe last season on the podcast, but you know, when I was a kid, you were told that, or at least I was told, the key to being a good player is to make everybody you're playing with better, make everybody around you better. And I think McKinnon definitely does that. You know, he's still able to get points with, you know, less than ideal line mates. He's just dynamite. I think that might be the only reason that, you know, he might get more of a mention than Dry is like, he's just that much more important, you know.
Yes.
Without McKinnon, what is Colorado? You know, without Draisaitl, what is the Oilers? The Oilers are McDavid. So yeah, I'm not sure. I guess it kind of just comes down to like what criteria is deemed to be more important for the Hart.
Yeah, and that's the big one with the Hart, where it's like the Hart Trophy is for the most valuable player, but that usually just ends up going to the best player, and you don't have to be the best player to be the most valuable. Because you can be the most valuable to your own team, but still have someone else in the league or on your own team even maybe better than you in terms of sheer hockey talent. And I've got one guy in particular that I like, massive dark horse, like for the Hart. He wouldn't even get any major votes for it, but Connor Hellebuyck. And what he's
not who I thought you were going to say.
Really? Who else?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say the bread man.
He's also on my list. I was going to bring him up after this one too. but yeah, I've got Panarin and Hellebuyck here. Panarin, I think, is probably close to where McKinnon's going to get in terms of Hart consideration. I think he's right up there. I mean, Panarin in particular, best season of his career. He's got 95 points. I think he is a big reason why the Rangers are in playoff contention, that his offensive play has been driving that team. And he's playing with Zibanejad, right? Generally?
I think so. Yeah.
So, I mean, those two have been an incredible duo all season, and Panarin has led that charge, and he does...
Okay, sorry to cut you off. He's been playing with Ryan Strome.
Okay, so we've seen this season Ryan Strome has had as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which is out of nowhere.
Big time. And, you know, so Panarin's got less top-tier support than Draisaitl. But he's still doing the same. He's similar production to McKinnon. But I think New York has a little bit more depth scoring than Edmonton, but Panarin is kind of that identity, that driving force for the entirety of the Rangers offense at this point.
Yeah. I think that notion of, you know, kind of being above the rest of the team a bit is why I don't think Pasternak will get it. You know, Pasternak plays with unreal line mates.
Oh yeah, best line in the league.
He's still having an amazing season, but I feel like his importance to the team is a little bit less than, you know, MacKinnon, Draisaitl, and even Panarin.
I agree.
Did you have any other candidates that you had for the Hart?
Yeah, I just wanted to. I'll just expand on Connor Hellebuyck. Got distracted there for a minute, but we've seen, like, we've talked at length about how their defense had been absolutely decimated last summer. Like, they were not the roster they had in years past, that they were, you know, cup favorites basically, but they're still in playoff contention because of how good Connor Hellebuyck has been in net. His stat line isn't particularly impressive because of the team isn't like a top tier team this year, but he still is showing it in the underlying numbers, where he's second in goals saved above average, second only to Tuukka Rask. And he's also second, like, it's 22.51 to 22.4. This isn't even like a far away from first. This is like he's right on the cusp of being first in that category. And that stat's just showing how much, like, if the Winnipeg Jets had an average goalie, how much better Connor Hellebuyck has been in that position than this average goalie would be. Which to me shows how valuable.
Yeah, he's also faced the most shots.
There, yeah, another one too. And he's actually got a respectable save percentage too. It's not top in the league, but it's up there. And yeah, that's just showing how valuable Connor Hellebuyck himself has been to the Winnipeg Jets performance this season. If he wasn't as good as he's been, if he was even, you know, say he was as good as Braden Holtby is this season, the Jets would not be anywhere close to where they are.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked at length about how Winnipeg's defense has been this season, and you know they've definitely been doing better than we anticipated, but they're still giving up a lot of shots. So for Hellebuyck to be as good as he is, you know, that's important to them. I guess speaking of goalies, I have one dark horse that's not even going to be on the radar of anything, but Jacob Markstrom.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Just, you know, for all those same reasons, I watched a 5-minute long highlight reel of his greatest saves this season, and it made me think about how many goalies could
one
you
of those
do
per
that
game?
For? Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, I don't know how many other goalies you could do that for this season and have them all be amazing saves. He's really held them in a lot of games. Vancouver's defense, similar to Winnipeg's defense, you know, they didn't lose everybody, but they give up a lot of high danger shots. So to have Markstrom in there and be able to rely on him and just steal them some games, he's been a real difference maker for them. And I think
you can see it in the last month or so of the season that they played when he was injured, that they just didn't have that same, like, power to their game. Like, they kind of had a bit of a deflation after Markstrom went down.
Yeah, no confidence in Demko, or at least not as much confidence as Markstrom. It just hasn't been the same. Yeah, I think he's definitely been the MVP of that team. So it's, again, kind of gets down back to what I was saying, just what criteria do you use for the Hart?
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's definitely been that team's MVP. And I think as far as, in my opinion, as far as goalies go, I think he's got it for the Hart. If a goalie was to win, I would pick him.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, because I mean it. Yeah, because the Hart Trophy just gets best player so often that best and most valuable end up being synonymous. So it's you kind of want to look and see at the player's actual impact on the team, and then you can kind of find these other types of players who might not get the consideration or the fanfare or the coverage, but they're still just as valuable as the best player.
Yeah, and what Markstrom's got going for him is that he did miss some time. So you saw the team struggle without him. You know, when his father passed away and he went back to Sweden, the team struggled. You know, he got hurt near the end of whatever you want to call it, end of the season, this season. Team struggled a lot. So, you know, he is very important to that team. He's made a lot of starts. Some value there for sure.
Mm-hmm. So while we're on the topic of goalies here, how about we jump into the Vezina Trophy?
All right. Well, I think you know my pick.
Yeah. Okay. So we've covered your pick.
Yeah.
Do you have anybody else who you would throw in this award consideration this year?
I mean, it's tough for me. There's a lot of goalies that have played very, very well. But there's a lot of goalies that split some time and not sure if they've warranted winning it, you know, like, you know, Merzlikins, has been unreal. But that was just for a short stretch. So,
yeah,
you know, was it enough? But I think other than that, I think Tuukka Rask, it's been lights out.
Yeah, Tuukka Rask is my favorite front runner right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's basically near the top in every single major goalie category. 26-8-6 record. As I mentioned before, he's leading the league in goals saved above average. So even though he is on a really good team, he's still performing significantly above what an average goalie would do on that team, or, you know, as the analytics say. It's just the main knock for Rask is his games played, because he's only played about 40 games, whereas some of the other names, I want to specifically mention Hellebuck as well here, has played 55-ish. So there's a bit of a discrepancy there.
Yeah, I mean, I would be totally okay with him winning. Rask has always had kind of a weird reputation amongst Boston fans of being, like, you know, the reason that they lose, but he's always been a solid goalie. And, you know, we saw him in last year's playoffs. Again, sad tear going down my face right now that we had no playoffs, but he was amazing in last year's playoffs. It was a real treat.
Their offense dried up. Like that perfect, or perfection or immaculation line.
The perfection.
They dried up. Yeah, they didn't do as well. And then Tuukka Rask kept them in it and got the Bruins through a couple of those series.
Yeah. I mean, I remember having conversations about if he would still get MVP in that finals. You remember? We talked about that because he was that good.
He was.
It could be like a sad J.S. Jaguar situation where he lost the cup but won the MVP of the playoffs.
Yeah, that was a very real possibility.
So yeah, I think, you know, he's just kind of continued right on from that, and he's been really good. So I mean, I would like to see Markstrom win, but I think it's Rask to lose.
I think it's Rask. I think Hellebuck's gonna get a lot of consideration here as well.
Mm-hmm.
As usual, we're probably going to see someone like Andrei Vasilevskiy, just because the Lightning had that massive turnaround and he did start playing quite a bit better than he did at the beginning of the year. So the kind of recency side of it's going to get Vasilevskiy some votes, and the reputation side of it as well.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. He kind of had like it's like a tale of two halves of the season. He had that rough, shaky start, but then he dialed it in and got a lot better.
Time. Two other goalies who are definitely good enough stats wise, but they did not play enough games to get consideration for it this year, are Darcy Kemper and Anton Khudobin.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are kind of up in the top five, top 10 of like save percentage and goals against average, and that same goal saved above average, they're top five, but they only played about 30 games, which is not going to be quite enough to push them past even Tuukka Rask or Connor Hellebuck this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because I'm looking at a list here of saves made by goalies. this would be like whatever the darkest shade of dark would be for a dark horse, for MVP or for Vezina, would be Mackenzie Blackwood.
Oh, yeah.
Because real, of though. You know, those stats that you mentioned a few podcasts ago about how much better New Jersey was with him in the pipes compared to anybody else. You know, he has made a huge impact on that team.
That's a good find. That's a good point.
He was just, it's like night and day for that team with him in the net and not.
New Jersey was a borderline playoff team with Blackwood in net.
Yeah, like, they were both
like a mid to high 80 point pace, which would put them like right on the cusp.
Mm-hmm.
And without him, they're like worst in league, like rivaling down like Ottawa.
Yeah, so if that doesn't say valuable player, what does, right?
Yeah,
anyway,
very, very good point. Good
that
line.
Was kind of a weird one, but yeah, back to the Vezina. I think, yeah, you know, Hellebuck, Tuukka Rask, I think it's going to be one of them.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll probably give the nod to Rask.
Yeah, I think it's the stat line for me. Mm-hmm. Rask has like the all-star stat line compared to Hellebuck, who has like an average record. His stats are on the low end of good.
Mm-hmm.
And Rask's are like league leading. I think that's what's going to sway the voters more than Hellebuck's situation in the context of his season.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess bump up out of the crease to the blue line. So the Norris. Who is your top pick for this?
I think this year is John Carlson's turn.
Yeah, I think so too.
he's kind of been in the discussion for a couple years, right? He had that one breakout year when Washington won the cup a couple seasons ago, and he never won it. I think they kind of he didn't have the reputation, he didn't have the coverage about his game built up to win it. This year, with the amount of offense he's produced, like it's an historic level of offense from a defender. That he's got 75 points in 69 games. He had that chance of hitting 90 points as a defenseman for the first time in like 20 years since Ray Bourque did it. It's probably his. And even as a player on the ice, like he has a positive impact all over. He is a fairly average defender propped up by excellent offense, but at the same time, he still has a positive impact on his team's overall output, which is about what you can ask for, really.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I watch this guy all the time. You know, when it comes to defense, he's okay. But he really shines in offense, and he's been amazing on that power play unit. His development of his shot has really enabled the Capitals to have an effective power play, because you have to respect his shot and Ovechkin's shot on the point. So it's been huge. And yeah, he's got a great breakout pass. He's active with the puck. He's a great all around D man. But you know, definitely that offensive edge. Aside from him, I don't really know. Roman Josi with the same reasons, you know, the offense for sure.
Yeah, Josi has probably been the best Predator this season. Like their goaltending that has been solid kind of dwindled off a bit this year. Their offense was struggling, but Josi, I mean, he's excellent defensively, he's great positioning, and he has a surprisingly significant offensive impact as well. That he's actually leading the Predators in scoring chances, as well as high danger scoring chances, and he's leading the league in scoring chances for a defenseman, and he's got like a hundred scoring chance lead over second or something crazy and significant. And he's also third in the league for time on ice. So he's playing every situation like 25 plus minutes a night, basically. If anyone's going to take Carlson, take it from Carlson this year, it's going to be Josi. And I think it's probably going to be a pretty close one between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I think Yossi's probably kind of a next year or the season after for his Norris Trophy.
Yeah, I think just the amount of points that Carlson has, it's going to go to him.
Yep.
Which will be funny because, you know, Mike Green was right there before. Not this amazing, but Caps have been spoiled with offensive D-men. You know, again, dark horse would be Cale Makar for this or Quinn Hughes.
I've thought about putting them in this race, but...
I don't think they're quite there.
No.
There's another trophy that, you know, one of them will probably get, but I think it's Carlson's at this point. Okay. So move on, I guess.
We jump right into the Cale Makar Quinn Hughes race there. We were just talking about him. We'll jump into the Calder Trophy.
Sure. So
basically, it's just a race between Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes for this trophy. There's three other names I'll throw out there, but they're not going to win it in Victor Olofsson, Dominic Kubalik, and Adam Fox. But it's going to be one of Makar and Hughes, and they are both insanely, insanely similar that it's so hard to even differentiate between the two players. Their stat lines just read nearly identical. The major difference is that Cale Makar has played less games than Quinn Hughes. Makar's got 50 points in 57 games right now. He's averaging 21.01 in time on ice per game. Quinn Hughes has 53 points in 68 games. He's averaging 21.53 in time on ice.
And it's tough to split them. I don't know. It's going to be a coin flip, I think.
Personally, I've said Cale Makar in the past just because there is a little bit more of an analytics side showing Makar has a slightly more positive impact on the game than Quinn Hughes did this season. Higher points per game for Makar. Quinn Hughes has more expected goals for, but Cale Makar has a better expected goals against. And they have basically the same possession number, so it's hard to kind of differentiate between the two, who's having a more direct impact on the way that on the flow of the game when each of them are on the ice. I think the only thing is just going to be whether or not that games played difference between Makar and Hughes is going to make or break who wins it.
Yeah. We've seen it before where the stats just determine who wins. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll probably be Hughes if, you know, they don't play any more games this season. I just wanted to be noted that I had Olofsson and Kubalik and Adam Fox on my fantasy team all at one time. Amazing.
Nice. Amazing. Humble brag.
Yeah. I guess also a shout out to Denis Gurianov. He's had a really good season for the Dallas Stars, and he was my breakout player for them in our season previews, so super happy about that. He's just a fast
he was exciting to watch. That's going to be a fun player in a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Kubalik has been fun to watch too. And Olofsson has some injury trouble, but you know, he still put up a lot of goals, which is cool. But yeah, I think Quinn Hughes is my pick for this one.
I'm still gonna stay Makar.
So I got a couple Canucks. I'm going all in Canucks.
Yeah, bandwagon Canucks fan over there.
Yeah. So we'll move on to Jack Adams, I guess, Coach of the Year. My pick for this is Pittsburgh Penguins Sullivan, Mike Sullivan.
I've got Jared Bednar from Colorado, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm imagining we're going to have the exact same reasoning on both on both of our logics here, and they're both going to be completely right. That Pittsburgh and Colorado have both dealt with insane injury issues, but they're still having really good seasons.
Yes. Yep, nailed it.
I don't know how much to add to that, but the teams have been able to do with the systems that they've got in place. They've basically been rotating through depth players and call-ups and rookies and whoever can stand on the ice for 5 minutes at a time. And there's Pittsburgh's what, second or third in the Metro. They're kind of fighting with Philly. Colorado second in the Central, like 92 points. Pittsburgh's are high 80s, I think. And that's more than you could have asked for out of the situation that the teams have faced through the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, they've just battled through adversity, you know, kind of that next guy up mentality. It kind of really speaks for itself, you know, just having call up players, replacement level players coming up and your system is still working. I think that speaks to having a good system, a good coach, who's able to work with multiple different players and, you know, temper the mental game of I'm being called up, I'm being sent down. You know, that takes a responsible, effective coach to manage that and not have your guys like flame out and or get too excited or get too bummed out when they get sent back down when somebody comes healthy again. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think, you know, you gotta take that into account as well. My other coach for this would be Paul Maurice in Winnipeg. Kind of a similar situation, but just I think handling that blue line. And also it seems like they've finally been able to reach Patrick Laine, you know, change his game up a little bit. So I think that's been huge.
Patrick Laine had a bit of a different mentality coming into the season, it seems like, and he kind of showed on the ice that he's been more of a team guy. He's put up a lot more assists. I think it was like the first time in his career he's got more assists than goals.
Yeah. So I think Paul Maurice has done a really good job there. Also, he is incredibly hilarious in post-game interviews, so that has to be taken into account, his intangibles.
Yeah, that's the coaching intangibles.
Good interviews.
John Tortorella is now the favorite.
Yeah. I don't know. Anybody, any other coaches stand out to you?
I've got Alain Vigneault and Dave Tippett, because the Jack Adams Trophy always likes to reward a good turnaround story. And both of these teams, Vigneault in Philadelphia, Tippett in Edmonton, have been insane turnarounds from where they were last year.
Yeah, I was thinking Tippett as well.
Yeah, so with Dave Tippett, the two main things for the Oilers have just been their special teams dominance. They've gone from one of the worst special teams teams in the league to one of the best, with like a 10 percentage point jump in penalty kill and almost just under a 10 in power play, 10 percentage points, and you know, 482 points percentage up to a 585 points percentage, put them from 70-ish points up to 90-95 in the playoff position. And it's basically the same deal in Philadelphia, that their goals against per game has dropped from 3.4 to 2.8. Their goals for per game went up 2.9 to 3.3. So they've also got a massive jump in points percentage that's again put them right up into a playoff position. So one of those two is probably going to be a nominee, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, last year shows us that everyone likes a turnaround story. So I think they'll definitely get some contention for sure. Other than that, any other trophies or awards that you wanted to go over?
But we end off with the Selke.
That's the hardest one to choose.
It's so hard to actually quantify or find like reasoning to pick a certain player over another. It's a lot of times this is just like the biggest reputation award, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I was to just, without even looking at any stats, just go with O'Reilly.
I mean, O'Reilly and Bergeron are there every year no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But this year might finally be the year that Sean Couturier gets it.
Ooh, yeah, Coots.
So he's been up in the Selke voting regularly over the last five seasons. I think he was the second or the first runner up, either last year or a couple years back. But I think this might be the year that he finally gets the Selke over Bergeron.
Mm-hmm.
So with how strong the Flyers have been this season, his performance, two-way play, I mean, he's 60-point guy. He's helping the team big time defensively. He's got like a 59 face-off winning percentage, which is just insane at this point. I think he's finally got the coverage, like the reputation built up, and probably it's his turn to get that award.
Yeah, plays PK, plays a lot of minutes, still puts up points. Yeah, I think he could be a definite contender for that.
One other guy, I keep seeing, slowly you're getting more and more ways to find the defensive impact of forwards in games. And one of the guys over the last couple months here that's kind of stood out in a lot of those metrics is Anthony Cirelli of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm. That there's, looking at his defensive impact as a forward, his numbers kind of match Patrice Bergeron. And him and Bergeron both have a 1.92 goals against average, or goals against per 60 at even strength. And when Anthony Cirelli is on the ice, Tampa Bay has a 9.43 save percentage compared to what's going to be like probably the 9.1, 9.2 that everyone else is, which is quite a testament to how significant his play or his line is to Tampa Bay's performance.
I don't have stats on this guy, but Philip Dano, Montreal Canadiens, has also had a good defensive season. He's also been putting up, I think he's around 50 points, maybe. I don't have it here, but he's definitely been playing well for the Montreal Canadiens. But you know, again, probably not going to get a whole lot of votes, but still should be mentioned that
he'll be the type of guy that gets like the fourth and fifth place votes. Like the, oh yeah, here's recognition votes for this guy. Yeah, I just pulled up Deneau. So yeah, he's sitting at 47 points. His possession numbers, he's got like a 60 Corsi and Fenwick 4 percentage. Like that's really high. That's above, significantly above where an average player would fall. And like, yeah, because he's kind of their relied on two-way guy. Like he plays the penalty kill. He's got that one really good line Montreal has. It's like him and Tatar and one other guy, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know their lines, Suzuki or
I can't remember which line that was, but Deneau's developed into a really solid two-way forward, so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some of those recognition votes.
Who do you think is your comeback player of the year?
Let me just pull up the Colorado Avalanche roster here.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be one of those guys, like maybe not comeback per se, but Andrei Burakovsky, the year he's had in Colorado. I'm tempted to throw Hellebuyck in there because he was off lat. He wasn't very good last season, but his career progression has shown that he has like one bad year, one good year, one bad year, one good year. So we kind of expected this year to be better.
I've got Duclair. Anthony
choice.
Duclair.
Good choice.
Aside from that, I don't know. It's been so long since I've watched hockey. I can't remember.
I'm just flipping through some stat lines here just to see.
Nylander with his contract. He's having a good year this year.
You throw Ryan Strome in there. We talked about him earlier as well.
Ooh, not really a bounce back. Maybe we'll change it to more of a breakout. Neil Pionk.
Yeah, he's better than anybody expected him to be.
Yeah,
that turned out really well for them, actually.
Yeah, he's been a huge part of that blue line. He's been huge on the power play. I thought they were going to get somebody else on the blue line at the trade deadline to kind of like control the power play. But he's still there. But yeah, he's having a huge offensive breakout, looking super confident back there, which is always cool to see a player on a new team just step in and kind of take over.
Yeah, because he had a hot start to the year as well, I think, offensively, but he's been a reliable defender for them all year, which has been more than anyone could have asked for out of what they gave up for him. And they just needed someone to fill a hole. We were assuming that Pionk was going to end up being kind of like a second, third pairing guy. But no, he's probably right up there as their best. Are there any major disappointments?
Dustin Byfuglien. Guy was invisible out there all season. Disappointments? Jacob Trouba. The flip side of that, Pionk. I think he's been good, but he's been outshined by D'Angelo and Fox.
Time.
He doesn't play on the power play. I think he got like 2 weeks of power play time and then just stopped.
Yeah, Tyson Barrie overall, big time. I mean, part of it was misuse by Mike Babcock while he was still in Toronto, but he also hasn't been the kind of number one right D that Toronto had hoped for.
Yeah, he's done a lot better since the coaching change to Keefe, but yeah, definitely not as huge of an impact as they wanted. Probably Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel is probably a huge disappointment.
And Taylor Hall. Both of those guys, actually. Kessel's having, I think Kessel is having the worst or the second worst season of his career. And it's only rivaled by like his sophomore year in Boston in terms of total offensive production. And I mean, Taylor Hall has not done a whole lot since he went to Arizona, but the team has also just taken an absolute nosedive since that trade. So he hasn't really had a chance to be like part trophy Taylor Hall yet.
Yeah, that was a rough one. PK Subban, disappointing in New Jersey.
Yeah, he hasn't had that same game control, game changing type of puck control that he usually has.
Especially for the salary cap that he has been, been shitty. One of the players for breakout or bounce back or whatever you want to call it, JT Miller.
Yes.
He's been almost a point per game or at a point per game for the Canucks this season. People really criticized that first round pick in that trade that the Canucks gave up for him, and they are just laughing at that price right now. He's been amazing for them. He really stepped into that team and just has shined. He's having a hell of a year.
Huge for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that'd probably be one of the breakout stars this year. I think
he'd get my vote. I think that wraps things up for this episode. Who do you think will or should take home these awards this season? Let us know on our posts on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter and Facebook at Clappercast. So thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time with more hockey talk.